This is Women's Voices and Women's Stories on Yin Radio, and I'm your host, Sandy Billings. Today, we're dealing with a topic that we all have to face because there's only one alternative. That alternative is death. The reality is growing older. From KRFP Moscow, Idaho, this is Yin Radio, and today our show is about growing old. We start with an interview from the co-editor of Kiss Tomorrow Hello, Notes from the Midlife Underground. Kim Barnes is a noted author who teaches at the University of Idaho and lives in Moscow, Idaho. I spoke with her in September 2006, live in the studio, for a very early Yin Radio program. Here's my interview with Kim Barnes. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, we're going to talk mostly about Kiss Tomorrow Hello. Mm-hmm. This is a book called with a subtitle Notes from the Underground, from the Midlife Underground, mm-hmm. by 25 women over 40. Mm-hmm. And as I've looked through the book, it's a wide range of ages. It's not just women in the 40s.
No. Women in their early 40s to women in their late 60s. And it's interesting to me that some of these women are still attempting to conceive, even as other of these women are finding that they have grandchildren, Onyx Smith specifically, in young teenage granddaughter that she did not know she had. So it's a wide range, but more than anything, I think what this book is about is, in fact, change. It's about transformation and leaving one identity and finding your way into another.
That's great. As I've looked through it and seen the topics and read a number of the selections, I was seeing that the book covers the gamut of, our bodies, our minds,
absolutely,
our changing roles, mm-hmm. sex, love, purpose, mm-hmm. Just everything. But mm-hmm. you've put the unifying face on that.
And, you know, it was funny. I was at the Mountains and Plains Booksellers Association just last week, I think it was, and was promoting this book to booksellers from all over the Mountains and Plains region. And this middle-aged couple came up. They were both booksellers, a husband and wife. And she saw this book, and she just squealed. I mean, she said, "Oh, my God, I've got to have this." And the husband was kind of standing back as though he might be snake bit. And she knew immediately why she wanted to read it. And he kind of looked at me, you know, from a few feet away, and he said, "Well, what's it about? You know, other than aging women." Mm-hmm. And I said, "You know, there's something in here for you, too." I said, whoever lives with a middle-aged woman needs to read this book. And we all do.
Yes.
All of us, mothers, wives, sisters, even daughters, you name it. And I said, "But really, when men ask me that, what I tell them is there's some really hot sex in this book." And he laughed. And I said, "But here's what you have to know." I said, "This book is full of boldness. It is all about being bold." And I said, "There's no whining." And he said, "That's hard to believe." And his wife hit him with the book. And I thought, all right, this is where the conversation begins.
Yes. Yeah. And I assume that book she hit him with was one you signed.
It absolutely was. Yes,
excellent.
It absolutely was.
Excellent. Well, how did this book come about?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at you. I would say mm-hmm. you're getting
go ahead
there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm almost 50.
Oh,
and you know, I have mostly gray hair, as you can see. And Claire, my co-editor, is I think 55, mm-hmm. 56 actually, I think now. And Claire and I have been friends for a long time. We met years ago. I think it was 15 years ago. I had actually it's been longer than that because my children that were just born. So it's been getting closer. It's been like 18 years that we have known each other. And we're both writers. She's an incredible novelist and short story writer and also a writer of personal essays. And together, she and I have been through any number of life changes. She has seen my children grow and mature and leave the nest. I have seen her son do the same. I have seen her through a tremendously traumatic divorce. We have seen each other's books published and been friends throughout this. And we share the same agent. And our agent had been asking us to edit this book for a long, long time. And we had said no because we didn't want it to interrupt our own writing. Because we knew, I have done anthologies before, and I knew how much time it would take. But we, the more we thought about, and the more we thought about the stories we have shared, and how sometimes we feel so isolated as women, going through not only the change, but many changes. And we started talking to other women writers, and we know many women writers because of our writing lives. And they were so excited, and we finally said yes to our agent, Sally, we'd do this. And we made a list of probably 100 women we knew we would want to have in this anthology. We thought many of them would say no, but you know what? We started at the top of the list with people who are very named. Their names are very marketable, such as Pam Houston and Julie Glass, who is National Book Award winner, and Lolly Winston, who wrote Good Grief, which was a national bestseller. And you know what? They all said yes. They put things aside that would be much more profitable because they wanted to be a part of this conversation and because it's groundbreaking. Women have not been allowed to write honestly about these stories.
Yes. I sense that in everything I'm reading, and I guess that's why it touches us so much as we read these. We find something we can identify with, mm-hmm. and I imagine that happens at any age, although I'm also over 40, uh-huh. and right halfway between on my way to my next decade.
Uh-huh.
And I'm beginning to see all these things, and I not just now,
mm-hmm.
but it helps us be prepared also for where we're going.
Yes,
if we share our stories, I think
Absolutely.
Women need community, and you've really begun mm-hmm. to create a mm-hmm. real good piece of that.
Oh, thank you.
So, did you had to select the authors?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure if mm-hmm. they were all there waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they may not have known they were waiting.
Yeah, and we wanted a wide range of voices, you know, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons we wanted that is because of the very reason you just mentioned. Our mothers, now this isn't the case across the board, but my mother and Claire Davis's mother my mother's still alive, her mother is no longer alive, of a generation where this was not talked about. You did not use the word menopause. I never heard that word until I was in sex ed or something, or biology in junior high. It was whispered if it was said at all, and it was the change of life. She's going through the change, you know. But often it was just not talked about at all. I mean, my mother wouldn't even say the word pregnant. It was so shameful. She used PG. Claire's mother never breathed a word of it. It was very shameful. And so we wanted a book that would speak to, I mean, you have to understand, these essays are stories. And what I mean by that, they're not just contemplating menopause or contemplating wrinkles or contemplating children leaving the nest. They are real life stories. They're stories about being raped at the age of 18, as Ellen Sussman was, and then being 50 and finding not only love, but sex all over again. That essay's called Tearing Up the Sheets, a meditation on midlife sex.
It made me cry. I mean, not just cry, I was
weeping.
out and out bawling.
But it also has hilarious moments. When she and her husband are having midlife sex on the couch and his hips hurting and, you know, his glasses get knocked off.
Yes.
You know, and they decide, let's just go get in bed, you know.
Yeah.
But the passion, but...
Well, let me be clear that I wasn't crying because of the hard parts. It was because of the coming through it.
Absolutely.
And I felt that every story was, as you mm-hmm. said, uplifting. It wasn't, mm-hmm. what did you say, no whining?
No whining. But, you know, they're honest. And that's,
oh yeah.
they don't, these essays, these narratives, personal narratives, man, they do not back away from the truth. Mm-hmm. They are hard sometimes to read just because they're so bold in yeah. saying, here it is. Mm-hmm. I've got to deal with it. You've got to deal with it. We've got to deal with it as a community. And, you know, some of the essays are hilarious simply. I mean, Karen Carbo's essay on online dating just cracked me up. You know, and maybe I'll just read
a
little bit.
Yeah, do you have a piece from that? That'd
be great. Well, I could read Karen's. I mean, just the humor here is so wonderful and brilliant. And her essay is titled OW/YM Q&A. And OW stands for older woman. YM stands for younger man. Now, not just a younger man, but a much younger man, as she says. And the essay starts, when people discover that my boyfriend Jay is 16 years younger than I am, they are intensely curious. Friends, acquaintances, old college chums, the mothers of my daughter's friends, New York magazine editors, and my favorite Russian pedicurist all want to know how I do it, as if I'm the mother of quintuplets or I'm supporting my family solely on bottle return refunds. It's outlandish, loving the 30-year-old Jay. When I first began dating Jay almost 5 years ago, people who hadn't met him would ask what he was like. I would enthuse about his sense of humor, his generosity of spirit and urge to shake people up occasionally, and the fact that he looks like the love child of Johnny Depp and Leonardo DiCaprio. By the way, I have met Jay, and it's true. This was all disingenuous of me. I was hedging. I knew the moment I mentioned that Jay was 25, I would provoke one of two responses. The first would be alarm. Oh my God, an editor at a woman's magazine said to me upon learning Jay's age, how can you do it? I could never be with a younger man. I wish I could report her dismay stem from the fear of something substantial, like how I, as baby boomer, could possibly share a life with someone who wasn't even alive when Kennedy was shot. But it's never about that. It's always about looks and aging and the fear that loving a younger man means a life where you're eternally reminded that you're not as young as he, that every time you look into his eyes, which will have no bags under them, you'll be brought face to face with your own self-loathing and mortality. The second response is the ridiculous, you go, girl! The message here is that I've done something zany and reckless, like quit my job and moved to Tahiti. You go, girl, is rarely uttered when the age difference is less than 10 years. And then she goes on to some questions, hilarious questions about, do you have to have sex with the lights off? Because surely he doesn't want to see you. And it goes from there. And her responses are both incredibly insightful and hilarious.
Yes, she's pretty humorous with her, at least her initial response to that. She kind of goes for the shock factor, mm-hmm. and then she gives a real answer.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. I love that essay mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. Actually, I haven't read one that I haven't liked.
Oh, I'm glad. So,
and many of them are written by local authors.
Yes. Well, you know, Claire and I are blessed with women writer friends from this area who happen to be our friends and from this area, but more than that, they're some of our favorite authors. Mary Clearman Blue, of course, Joy Passanante, both who live here in Moscow and teach at the university. And of course, Claire teaches at Lewiston. And then Onyx Smith out of Missoula. Karen's from the West Coast. But we wanted those voices from all over the country because, like you said, what we're looking for are voices reminding us what it's like to enter into this time of life, but also voices at the other end of this time showing us the way and saying to us, not only are you going to make it through, but there's going to be, if you let it, and if you believe this, there will be a liberation and a new identity that you will embrace and that will embrace you.
Thank you very much, Kim.
Oh, it was a pleasure being here.
Kim Barnes co-edited Kiss Tomorrow Hello with Claire Davis. Kim spoke with me for Yin Radio in September 2006. Installment number 2 for this show on the topic of growing old comes from an art show opening. It was a collection of pieces done by women artists in honor of other women artists, women honoring women. The format of each art piece was contained in a box. One was an old silverware case displayed open. One was a homemade box about the size of a shoebox. Installment number 2 is my conversation with artist Ruby Valentine at the show's very packed opening reception.
I am thankful for this challenge that Laurel and Louise Colson put forth in order to have this show with this focus on it. Because for the last 2 years, I've been so much helping older folks get organized and everything, that all I've been doing is taking stuff and shoving it into my big studio. And when this project came up, I had the opportunity to focus. And so I focused on this. And as a result of this, I have 4 other shrines started. One to Lois Blackburn, one to Betty Crocker, one to my son, and one to my daughter. And that all happened as a result of this style format.
And are you calling this a shrine as well?
This is an homage to Shirley Salzman. Uh-huh. And this is Shirley, 3 pictures of her. She's been a friend of mine since the very early 80s. I chose her not so much because of the friendship, but because as an artist, she works every single day. And she does it whether she's at home or whether she's visiting or whether she's traveling or no matter whatever else she's doing. That's what she does, is make art. And this is a piece that she did, which was a performance piece for a thing called Bearing Witness. It was a calendar that had all of these naked bodies in peace symbol signs or SOS or whatever. And she did that in Arcata.
And I'm going to describe it because I like it quite a bit. It's probably 100, less than 100.
There were 68
women of all sizes and shapes, naked, holding hands in a big circle, but not just a circle. They're on the coast. They're on a piece of land jutting out over the coast. And inside the circle, the women are all linking arms and making a peace sign. And the image isn't directly from up. It's at an angle. So
kind of looking,
it's very nice.
Slightly down.
You're looking down from above, but not from straight up. So you see the shape, but you see that it's real humans. It's a real message and call for peace.
Yes.
And women are the peacemakers.
Yes, they are. And her paintings vary from this kind of texture and acrylic paint to watercolor and chalk. And she does a lot with collage. Like this was a Jehovah's Witness flyer that she added to.
And she added, one of my favorite elements she added was the... a good witch from The Wizard of Oz on her pink dress and her big hat.
Yes, that's right. And that smiley face.
Yeah, very
and
whimsical.
And this cherub up here. She can also paint realistically. She's adoring of the Virgin of Guadalupe, so that's in a lot of her artwork. So here's a picture with the Virgin and a painting with the Virgin in it. She's actually standing at the beach, but I cut her out and put her on another one of her paintings. Then these are invitations to her shows. She does a lot of collage work. And these are very big. They're like 24 by 36 or larger. And they're all these little, you have to really look carefully to see what's going on. But this Bodhisattva has an aura of all of these watches because time is such a essential part of Buddhism. And this is her business card, the Mona Lisa holding the Leaning Tower of Pisa and the who's that, David?
Michelangelo's David.
Yeah. This is the piece that she did after 9/11. She calls this one Be Fruitful and Multiply. And that's all stickers.
Really?
Yeah.
That's neat. It makes a good card, too. I would love to see the original, though.
I can give you a copy of this. I have several of these if you'd like to have one. This is a piece that she gave me when I went down to a raw foods institute. And I was going to only do raw foods. And she sent me that. And on the back, it says, good luck.
And it's a... I'll just say it's a woman, Shiva eating pizza.
That's right.
Not raw foods.
And here's Jerry Garcia dressed up as Santa Claus.
Well, and I'll tell you what, one of the things, not the only thing, one of the things, hi Lois, that I liked about it is it looks shrine-like. So it's funny that it looks Hindi shrine-like to me. I mean, just in a conceptual back, big picture kind of way, when I stood back, I thought, you know, the bright reds, the colors, the intricacies and the use of some gold, that just, to me, I thought, that's what I thought.
Oh, yeah. Now, the other thing you should know about this piece is that she sent me each and everything in the piece over the last 10 years. She goes around her place with a big file box and just throws stuff in it and then ships it off to me. And so I have this treasure trove to look forward to and to look through.
Thank you, Ruby Valentine.
Thank you, Sandy. It was lovely to speak to you tonight.
That was Ruby Valentine talking about her art project, Homage to Shirley Saltzman. You're listening to Yin Radio, and our show today is called Growing Old. Now it's time for installment number 3. Alice now is in her 80s. She has perspective and experience, and she shares it. Alice now has been active in a state commission on aging, adult daycare at the local hospital, and in foster care and child advocacy, among other things. Alice now spoke with me at Gritman Adult Daycare in September 2006.
Hi, Alice. Thank you very much for joining me today.
I think I will enjoy it.
Let's start, if you don't mind, with a little bit of background. I know that you're, of course, volunteering at Gritman Day Health. That's where we are right now doing this interview. And also you're with AARP on the advisory board.
Right.
What happened before all that?
Well, I am the mother of 8 children. I taught school for 24 years. I'm a farm wife. And now I'm retired and I travel.
Travel, that's a very good thing.
I have been very lucky. I've had some wonderful trips. I really enjoyed Indonesia, Peru. I climbed to the top of Machu Picchu.
Did you?
And I enjoyed the Holy Lands extremely. I went to... Israel, spent a week there, and then 2 weeks in Egypt. Mm-hmm. The pyramids were one of the few things that I saw that weren't a disappointment because I'd seen them on television, but I couldn't believe they were that big, that impressive.
Are they? Huh. Yeah. Do you go with a group, or I mean, how do you do that? I mean, you're traveling alone, kind of, but are you?
Well, actually, yes. When I went to China, I flew to Tokyo and joined a group there. When I went to Peru, I flew to Lima and joined one group, went back to Lima, joined another, went back to Lima, and joined the third. But that was the only way I could see the things I wanted to see.
Yeah. Wow, that's impressive. Is there some way you can describe why travel's important to you? What does it do for you?
I've always been very curious. I've always wanted to see things, yeah. And it just lets you know what the rest of the world is like.
Do you find things in these in the other countries, even when they have less, where they may have more of something than we have, something we can learn from them?
We can learn a great deal from them. In Peru particularly, you'd think the people down on the Amazon wouldn't be, but they are doing such a wonderful job of educating their children. And maybe the children have to go to school in a canoe down that big river, but they're getting them there, and they're educating them. And I think that's going to be the answer for those countries if they get their people educated. And we need to remember that we need to be sure that people get educated here too, not just sent to school, educated. There's a difference.
And you know that because you've been a teacher.
Right.
How long were you teaching?
24 years.
And what grades?
I've taught everything from 3rd through 8th.
Yeah. And you mentioned to me a favorite.
The 7th grade. They're wonderful.
Yeah. And what's special about 7th grade?
They haven't gotten to the point where they're old enough to want to get away from teachers, parents, this sort of thing. But they are old enough to start thinking. And if I taught those students anything, it was, hopefully, to think. Not just take it because, not just accept something that's written. It may be printed, that doesn't mean it's true. They have to think about it. Hopefully, that's what I taught them.
Yeah. Did you teach here in the area?
I taught in Cottonwood, Idaho.
Oh, okay. So you've been in Idaho for quite a while.
Born and raised.
Born and raised? Where were you born?
Up the Clearwater River, 60-some miles from Lewiston. And I lived out on a sheep and cattle ranch.
Yeah.
Went to school in Kooski.
Did you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you're in Deary.
Now I live in Deary, yes.
And you've been in Deary for quite a while.
About 6 years.
Oh, okay. Good. Let's talk a little bit about the freedom that you have to travel. I mean, this is something new for you.
Yes, it is. Because I was a school teacher, I have a pension. That's a little unusual for people, ladies my age. There just wasn't much that ladies of this age did that earned them a pension. Because I have pension and Social Security, I'm able to do the things I do.
Okay.
So.
And you said ladies of your age. I mean, I know that that's still a struggle for many women, but I understand why it was more of a struggle in the past.
Right.
You were involved with programs such as that? When you first joined AARP, or at some stage when you were involved
yes.
in AARP?
I joined the AARP through the NEA, National Teachers Association. Actually, the NEA people started AARP.
Oh.
They were the original. When I first went to work with them. I was a women's issues spokesperson for this area. Women's issues were pretty important then because so many women, as I said, so many women had no pension. They had very little to live on. Even their Social Security was a small portion of whatever their husband had paid in. Then when he died, they got a little more, but still it wasn't enough to live on. Or at least you didn't live on it very well. They are the people who are choosing, do I buy my medication or do I buy some more groceries? And there were so many issues that the women were facing at that time. Fortunately, it has gotten better.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it better? Is it?
It's better for several reasons. One of them rather sad, the fact that a lot of those older ladies are dying off, and the younger ladies have known a little better how to find finances for themselves. They haven't been so dependent on their husband's income. There are more of them since World War II. There's been more women working outside the home, so that they themselves have some Social Security or some pension, something that they can fall back on. It isn't the way it was for the older ladies who had none of that.
So the pension systems haven't necessarily improved, or if they have, it hasn't filled the gap?
The pension systems hasn't improved. The people who are of that age learned to do things that would get them into those pension situations. Unfortunately, the pension situation has gotten worse rather than better.
In what way?
Because companies are no longer paying into pensions. A lot of the companies, I shouldn't say all of them. And of course, if you do very low income work, you don't have anything to put into a pension on your own. So unfortunately, the big companies have dropped. A lot of them have dropped pensions.
I see. Is Social Security still pretty much the same, or do wives benefit? Spouses probably now.
Yes, it is spouses rather than wives, because now if a lady has made more money than her husband, he will benefit by that fact. He'll get better on his Social Security,
yes.
Which wasn't that way for a long time.
Yes,
but and. The Part D, for me, it just leveled out because I have to pay more for my insurance beyond my Social Security or my Medicaid care, not Medicaid, mm-hmm. To my insurance company. But it has helped a lot of people in buying their medications. Mm. Those people who are on extremely low income actually can get theirs for free. I just hope they got out enough and got the information to people enough that they signed up correctly for the Part D. Because if you were on Medicaid, they just put you on, they selected something for you unless you knew to go out and select for yourself. And so sometimes they didn't get the best one.
That's interesting insights about how things have changed, and it sounds like what you're saying is that women are taking care of themselves better.
Right. More women are getting an education. In fact, right at the moment, they tell me that there's almost more women going to college and university than there are men. And maybe I'm an education redneck or something. But education is so important to anybody and everybody. That doesn't necessarily mean you went to college. It means you read, you study, you pay attention. Everybody needs to know.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit just about aging. I guess there's so many factors involved in aging. I mean, we're aging from the day we're born. We don't start thinking about it until maybe we're in our early 20s, and probably not until we hit 30.
40.
And then 40, we think about it as becoming aged, but there's the physical and there's social. Let's start, perhaps, with social. How do you change in your social, in your relationship to others socially as we age?
It makes a lot of difference. And one of the mistakes that people make is because they get older, they get more isolated. And isolation is one of the worst enemies, physically, emotionally, mentally, that you could have. If you're isolated, you're more inclined to just sit. You're less happy. You're more likely to become depressed. So it affects you physically. If you're isolated, we we don't have an opportunity to keep our minds and our emotions alive. Mm-hmm. So there are some people sitting around dead, they just don't know it yet. Mm-hmm. So we are working right now toward trying to get transportation for people who live out in the rural areas so they won't be so isolated, so that they're able to come into Moscow and take courses at the university if they want to, or go to the senior center where they have more activities. We have a little senior center in Deary. It's a nice little senior center where people go have lunch and visit a little. Mm-hmm. It's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Our library situation is wonderful here. Mm-hmm. Of course, I was a librarian for 17 years, but I just picked up a book at the local library in Deary yesterday that had been ordered for me. I got it within 3 days. It was very important that I have it. It wasn't just something to read. That was on publishing. And it was wonderful. I ordered it and they could get it for me in that length of time. So maybe there's a book in Boise that I need. They can order it for me.
Yeah. And that leads me to say, why were you looking at a book on publishing?
I have written a novel. I'm hoping to get it published. It's not a story of my life, although that might be interesting. it's a survival, a book on survival. A disaster happens that envelops the whole Northwest, and it's how the people here are able to survive.
Neat, neat.
It has a little love story, too.
Oh, good. I think they all need that, don't they? We all need love, right?
You're right.
Oh, that's great. Good. I wish you the best of luck. Are you?
Thank you.
Did you just finish it, or have you been working on at what phase is this whole process for you?
Right at the moment, I'm editing, and I've almost got it finished, the editing finished, and I will be mailing it to contacted a publisher, and they said yes, they would be interested in seeing it. That doesn't say I'm going to sell it. It means that they are interested in seeing it, but I'm hopeful.
Step one. That's excellent.
It takes a lot of steps. I didn't realize it took that much work to not to write the book, but to edit it afterwards.
Oh. Yeah. That's sounds like the hardest part.
It is very much the hardest part.
But, well, that's very impressive. So talking about keeping active, wow.
I have been keeping very active. Besides the area, or AARP, I'm on the board of the Area Agency on Aging, and I'm also a CASA worker in Benoit County. CASA is Court-Appointed Special Advocate for Children.
Oh.
And those children that health and welfare have to take out of the homes, or the police have to take out of the homes, when they go to court, I go there to represent the child. Health and welfare are their point is to get the family back together. In some cases, the child is better off not back with the family. I have to make that decision and argue in court whether that child actually should go back to the parents.
It sounds like a hard job, emotionally.
It's a heartbreaking job. And believe me, you don't always succeed. Two of the people I have worked with are sitting in jail right now, which is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Young people.
Well, a woman that I worked with earlier in my life, an older woman, who lived in a senior living facility, very high end, very nice, you know, but it was all seniors. She looked at me in the eye and she said, "Don't you ever live in one of these. It takes all ages to make life." Based on your work with children, your activities in general, how would you respond to this woman? Do you?
She's right. She's extremely right. If you work in a nursing home, I worked in a local one here for 3 years as in the office. But I would see them bring in little children. The faces in the place would just all light up. They loved those children. And even if they couldn't really interact with them, they would still, you could see the result. So they need to have children around. And the children need the older people. It's mutually beneficial, I think.
Well, that leads me to ask you about what older people have to offer that's different from what younger people have to offer. Because as we change in our life stages, we have different strengths, gifts, abilities. And in our culture, I think we focus so much on the loss as we age. But that's not, sure, we lose some mostly physical abilities. And
right.
some mental abilities. It depends a lot on your luck of the draw as well as... But what can you point to as gifts related to aging?
The biggest gift, my biggest gift, is the freedom I have to do what I want to do. That's because I happen to be lucky financially that I can afford to do it, and I'm lucky that I have the physical ability to do it. But I can pick and choose. And one person said to me that when you get to be a grandmother, you are your grandchildren's friend. You're not their enemy as their parent is, because you can relax and enjoy them, and they can enjoy you. Their parents are working, they're busy, they're trying to make a living. The grandparent can sit over here and say, "Hey, let's do something fun today." And while they're doing something fun, they're learning.
Mm-hmm. They don't have to be the disciplinarian. The grandparent is free from that too.
Mm-hmm. So the grandparent and the child are buddies, and the parents are just kind of in between.
Yeah. And the freedom you're talking about, is that also related to life roles?
Yes, I think so. I am a widow, by the way, and I live alone. I have my own house. I'm free to, if I decide I want to go to China, I can go to China. I don't have to worry about some family member that needs me. You finally get to the point where, have you heard of the sandwich?
Explain it to me.
Right. The sandwich generation are those people who are young enough that they're still working, they have children, but they're also taking care of their in-laws or their parents or grandparents or something. they are sandwiched in between. And there are many, many people in that position now because people are living longer.
And so they're caregiving on both sides, the younger and the older.
Right. And I have reached that point where I have neither of those problems anymore. It's a big freedom.
Yeah.
One shouldn't feel good maybe about getting old so you're no longer responsible for other people. But it's nice not to be responsible. Maybe I had to be responsible too long. I raised 8 children. And I had my parents, my husband's parents, and then my husband who was ill for 14 years. So maybe that's why I feel so strongly about being free now.
I think it's nice, though. I read books. I mean, there's a lot of books out there about, for women in particular, because we are in the nurturing role more often than men. It's fairly rare for a man to take that role on very large part of their lives.
Right.
That we are spending our lives taking care of others, and we do get to a stage, usually, if we're fortunate, where it's our turn. Mm-hmm. I get to decide what I want to do for me for the first time. And it's in traditional living arrangements, men get to make their decisions of what they want to do, of their turn, while their wife's supporting them. And children are having a turn until they become adults. But sometimes women don't get that turn until all the children are gone, and then in some cases, parents, husbands, whoever else we may be caring for. So it does make sense, and it isn't unusual, or there wouldn't be so many books on how to make these decisions now.
Right.
And it's very interesting to me that I am experiencing that without children. But I've reached the age where if I had children at a traditional age, my children would be leaving, mm-hmm. and I would be likely to be freer. Yet I'm still having that first-time feeling of, oh, I get to choose. So it is interesting that it happens to most of us.
I think it does now far more for women than it used to. Mm-hmm. Women had very little choice for a long time. Now that more of them that are working outside of the home or going on to higher education, they're beginning to make those decisions, and that's what the big change has been. Women are freer, even at your age, women are freer now than they were 2 generations ago.
Yes, so. Yes. And of course, I would advise young women there's still work to be done, but...
A lot.
That's probably another conversation.
And we'll talk about the glass ceiling later.
Okay, we'll do that. Let me ask you... Just a couple other things, if you don't mind. First of all, are you willing to reveal how many years you've been working at this thing called life?
I am 79. I will be 80 in February.
Oh, wonderful. And it sounds like living's pretty good for you.
It is.
So it's something we want to keep on doing as much as we can, enjoy what we have.
I've been very lucky, or I have chosen correctly, or something, but I've had a good life.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing some of it with us today.
Thank you.
Alice now. She lives in Deary. She's, as you have heard through the course of this interview, a very active woman, volunteer at Gritman Day Health, on the advisory board of the Moscow chapter of the AARP, an advocate with CASA in Benoit County, and I'm sure I've left out a few other things. Thanks for sharing yourself with us.
You're welcome.
That was my September 2006 interview with octogenarian Alice Now. For this Yin Radio show with the theme of growing old, we have one more piece today. It's an essay by Frank Kaiser, although you may have heard it attributed to Andy Rooney. It was read for Yin Radio with permission from Frank Kaiser by John Poole.
As I grow in age, I value mature ladies most of all. Here are just a few of the reasons senior men sing the praises of older women. An older woman knows how to smile with such brightness and truth, old men stagger. An older woman will never ask out of the blue, "What are you thinking?" An older woman doesn't care what you think. An older woman's been around long enough to know who she is, what she wants, and from whom. By the age of 50, few women are wishy-washy about anything. Thank God. And yes, once you get past a wrinkle or two, an older woman is far sexier than her younger counterpart. Her libido's stronger, her fear of pregnancy's gone, her appreciation of experienced lovemaking is honed and reciprocal. And she's lived long enough to know how to please a man in ways her daughter could never dream of. Young men, you have something to look forward to. Older women are forthright and honest. They'll tell you right off that you are a jerk if you're acting like one. A young woman will say nothing, fearing that you might think worse of her. An older woman doesn't give a damn. An older single woman usually has had her fill of meaningful relationships and long-term commitments. Can't relate? Can't commit? She could care less. The last thing she needs in her life is another whiny, dependent lover. Older women are sublime. They seldom contemplate having a shouting match with you at the opera or in the middle of an expensive dinner. Of course, if you deserve it, they won't hesitate to shoot you if they think they can get away with it. Most older women cook well. They care about cleanliness. They're generous with praise, often undeserved. An older woman has the self-assurance to introduce you to her woman friends. A young woman often snarls with distrust when her guy is with other women. Older women couldn't care less. Women get psychic as they age. You never have to confess your sins to an older woman. Like your mother, they always know. Yes, we geezers praise older women for a multitude of reasons. These are but a few. Unfortunately, it's not reciprocal. For every stunning, smart, well-coiffed babe of 75, there's a bald, paunchy relic with his yellow pants belted at his armpits, making a fool of himself with some 22-year-old waitress. Ladies, I apologize for my fellow geezers. That men are genetically inferior is no secret. Count your blessings that we die off at a far younger age, leaving you the best part of your lives to enjoy and appreciate the exquisite woman you've become, without the distraction of some demanding old fart clinging and whining his way into your serenity.
Thank you, John Poole, for that reading of In Praise of Older Women by Frank Kaiser. We're going to wrap up this Yin Radio show, Growing Old, with music from Arne Paalke. It's called The Old Crow. Me like
Thanks for joining me for this Yin Radio show, Growing Old. You can listen to past shows or podcast this show, or you can sign up for our electronic newsletter at yinradio.com. You can drop us a line at yinradio@vpfound.org. That's yinradio@vpfound.org. Yin Radio is produced at KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho. I am Sandy Billings, your executive producer and host. Opening music is by Piano Chocolat. Yin Radio is a production of VP Foundation. Thanks for joining me. Until next week.